symphonic marches, novelty marches. In addition to this, there is the Hippodrome March. After that, there comes the fight song type march. It is in the march vein and style, though all anybody ever hears of it is one chorus as a touchdown tune. But it does exist nonetheless. And as you go through the sequence of these marches, the initial ones are regimental. And the regimental marches that carry on from a distant past are of the nature of that famous one by the elder Strauss, the Radetzky March. That's one of the great examples of that kind of march from Middle Europe, in this case from Vienna, from Austria. Its rhythmic characteristics, the light and dark contrasts, all these elements feed so marvelously into a style. I feel that this is the initial influence in the early marches of Sousa, such as Our Flirtation or Sound Off, two of his very earliest marches. Or the Picador, that's another one of his early marches which marvelously reflect the Strauss's rather than any other influence. The French regimental march, wonderfully displayed in the title and content of the one by Louis Gan called Father of Victory. Great march. French military music in a frame. As different as it can possibly be from any Italian symphonic march, as different as it can be from the German counterpart. And the German counterpart, to just take a march that epitomizes the whole concept of the German military march, is the one by Karl Tiki called Old Comrades. These marches differ from all of the marches that we use and write in the length of the form, the extension of the form, and in most instances, after the march has been completed, there is a full da capo ending at the fine before the trio, thus extending the form over the same amount of paper. But then the European was always frugal with his land and careful with his crops, and he didn't have the land to waste and squander, so he used it. In our country, one of the very best of the marches representing the regiment and the regimental concept, and the greatest one to grow out of the Civil War period, of course, is Washington Graves by Claudio Graffula. about whom we spoke last night in connection with the Port Royal Band Book. And if it's been some time since you played Washington Grays, get it out. Coming in sequence to the British Regimental March, we come to a different concept of tempo. Whereas the French military march has a briskness about it, the German military march is a little bit more deliberate. And it can be frighteningly deliberate, as millions of people have learned to know. I shall never forget the first night I spent living in Salzburg, Austria. In February of 1938, I had been awarded, much to my great surprise and to my great joy, the Salzburg International Prize in Conducting. And this carried with it a summer's study at the Mozarteum in Salzburg, with the option of additional study provided you proved successful in those studies. And I was very elated, only to have this elation literally crashed when on the 9th of March Adolf Hitler marched into Austria, thus wiping out the government that had just given me a fellowship to study in the great institution in the name of its greatest son. And I just forgot about it. That's all. I had gone to spend the summer with my wife and her family, and was tracked down by the German embassy that informed me about 4 days before I was supposed to depart that this thing was on again, that the government was picking up the tab, and I had not much stomach for this. But I had a greater stomach for Mozart, and I didn't think that Adolf Hitler could ever be bigger than Mozart, so I went. And it was an incredible experience in my life, from which I shall never recover. And I arrived in Salzburg at the proper time and was taken out to the house of a retired lawyer in the suburb of Salzburg, in the little town of Riedenburg, Maxglan, through this great tunnel in the mountain. Beautiful suburban area. And I had dinner at a table where I could only speak the right words to keep from walking in the wrong door. And was bedded down in my feather tick in this beautiful room that was mine for the summer. And I put the light by my bed and I opened up the score to the Mozart G minor symphony. I was really, really going to read myself to sleep with Mozart. And all of a sudden in the distance I heard something. And I wasn't sure that I heard it. Then I knew I heard it. Half a mile from where I was living was a brand new barracks of the German army. And every night before they turned in, they marched the streets. No weapons, just those boots and those great voices and those incredible German Army marching songs. And I discovered as I lay there in this bed that I was suddenly sitting in a pool of sweat. Sweat was running off me in buckets, and it was a cold room. One of the most frightening things I ever heard in my life. The way they sing the songs, with the songs and the silence and the endless boots. They pace the words, songs, to the boots, and they're designed to make just exactly the effect that they made. They made it. I never forgot it. The German marching song, while it may not fall with great ears, with great ease upon the ears of many, is nonetheless a remarkable march form. And Old Comrades is for me the epitome of that. And it's designed upon how long it takes, of course, to bring them. The foot up and down, the full foot up and down. That's where the tempo of the German military march comes from. And if you ever want to know how fast to play Old Comrades, get out and goose step. The French military march is brighter, more fancy, based upon the common element of the brass and the reed, which are about even Steven in the average French military band. And everything on the bright side. Brilliant brass, not dull brass. Percussion light. Reeds heavy. That is in number. Brass brilliant. Across the channel, the British military march, it too takes its pace and pulse, not from the metronome marked at the upper left-hand corner, or from the English or from the Italian tempo indication, but from how long it takes a British soldier to march while he raises his right arm fully above his shoulder and brings it back to his side, which is about something like this. And to do that for hours sets the tempo. Dum, 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 dum. Or any one of the British marches you can think of. How long it takes to raise the arm up and bring the arm down, and to do it with a swing. So I'm sometimes a little disturbed when I hear Colonel Bogey or Mad Major or any one of these marches played rapidly, only because it seems that the whole flow of the pieces is based upon the sound of a different drum. Is busier than almost any Harry Alfred march. Kenneth Alfred march. It's the pace at which these marches are designed to move. And you'll notice also that these marches that we're talking about are not full of all kinds of filigree, like a circus march is. They're designed to move lots of men across a pavement. And if you ever get to London, and I hope you get there many times, it's so simple to go to London today. Gee. And so really inexpensive. If you go to the changing of the guard and follow the band back to the barracks. March with the band back to the barracks. Lots of times you can get away with it right in the street. I was adopted by the Irish Guard, so I didn't have much choice. And I was very happy about the adoption. But it's some experience to march down the street with a British regimental military band. I mean, whether they're playing National Emblem, Washington Post, Old Comrade. It seems to me that although I classified Opus 99 last evening as a masterpiece in the repertoire of the wind band, it has to be a masterpiece in the march repertoire too, because that's what he called it. But this is pure, unadulterated, dehydrated, fresh, frozen, completely undiluted Prokofiev. You'd know it was him waking up dead drunk on any desert island anywhere, anytime. It seems to me that it is not a slow, tedious piece. It's a marvelous little Prokofiev scherzo. I'm only sorry that it wasn't one movement of about a six-movement suite. But it is what it is. And it's one of those rapid pieces of cake that are so marvelous, played in that light way. In this style, everything is dehydrated again. I like to play this piece with the solo trumpet part being played on either a C trumpet or an E-flat trumpet, something real miniature. I like the drum that is used and featured in the piece to be the little piccolo drum, the real thin one, skin tight, boop. Real, the one I very seldom do like, the one with the real high pitch and little toothpick sticks that seems to go with the piece. Another of the great marches from Europe, representing an entire epitome of styles, is the Italian march L'Inglesine, about which there is also a very interesting story. L'Inglesina. You know it maybe under the name Inglesina, but that was an obvious grammatical error when printed first, but that's the way I saw it, and that's what was printed on the music, and that's how I recorded it. Subsequently, Teresa, who runs O Pagani in New York, I convinced her to put out a big edition of the piece, since I knew how much money they'd made on my record of it. So she decided she would correct the grammar, and it is L'Inglesina, which means the little English girl. Now, this is the typical Italian symphonic march. It's derivative opera. It is really opera without scenery, like the Verdi Requiem. And I think it has to be played in a dramatic operatic style. It represents the epitome of these pieces. You know, it has to be a double sheet. It's a march folded over. And again, its origin is symphonic, its concept operatic. And I think it must be played in this vein, or in these veins. Continuing across the Mediterranean, to Spain, there is a host of fantastic pasodobles, which are literally dances for two without the tea. And these dances have now achieved another dimension. The pasodoble, as any of you know who listened to that marvelous record Sunday in Spain, which is really, really a great, great record, this is a kind of march, unique and, again, symphonic in its origin. And I'm having the greatest difficulty getting Union Music Española of Spain to let us have them on any regular basis in this country. I know some of you have gone over and gotten them, and you know you have other march leggers who get them for you. And the need to have these pieces is great. We just can't lay our hands to them. One of the examples of that, one that I recorded, is one called The Golden Ear. And it, too, is a combination Sunday in Spain, bullfight, and everything else thrown into one. But again, its form is different from boom, 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 boom. The concept is, again, a little different and very refreshing. And the more of these we can have as a point of variety, the better. As for the guides in styles of playing these pieces, I had none, except my own wits, I suppose, my own feeling for marches. I've thought about them and sung them 6 million ways until I decide that's what I want, or I even know it sort of right away. And I throw that out as what I think that style should be. And thus far, I've lucked out pretty well. But it's all indigenously somewhere there in the music and all the music that you know of that country. That must be your guide. The Golden Ear is unfortunately available in a very bad edition. I will not knock the publisher or the man who did it, but the one that you can buy, you shouldn't buy. Because it is not the Golden Ear. It's paraphrased on the Golden Ear, but it is not the Golden Ear. If you want the Golden Ear, you have to get it from Union Española, Union Musical Español, Madrid. It was a nice attempt on somebody to get a fresh copyright, and I'm not arguing with that, but it's not the Golden Ear. Going up north now, the classic example of a march from the Scandinavian countries, of course, is the Valdres March of Johannes Hansen. And it's interesting how these three marches, which I've just mentioned, came into my possession. The first one, Inglesina, came into my possession in a remarkable way. I was in Clareton, Pennsylvania, to conduct the Pennsylvania All-State Band. At the time that the test pressing for the first album of marches that we'd recorded had just come out. I just had received the test pressing from which others were then to be squeezed. And I had this with me, and my host there was a marvelous old Italian band director with the incredible name Rutilio Rutilli. And the kids all called him Teach. And they loved him madly, and indeed they should have. And Teach had this party for us at his house, and he asked me to bring the recording because I had played it for him at school at his request. And so when the evening was finished and everybody had gone home, and he was then going to take me home, he says, "There's a great Italian march you have to have." Fine. What? Love to have it. He says, you must record it. What march is that? Well, he says, it's called the Ingolosina. Ingolosina was how he said it. But I can't really say it the other way very well. I have to think. He says, I'll send you a set of parts. You know, everybody's always going to send you a set of parts or a copy of a book or something. And intentions are always very good, but it doesn't always work. Always intentions are very fine. But 5 months later, came from Rotili, which he had gotten from a trip he went back to Italy to visit friends every year, family, brought it back with him, and he sent it to me. And went wild about it, of course, recorded it, on the guarantee, as I did with all these things, that the publisher would issue it and that it would be available. My policy about recording was I would record nothing that was not printed or which would not be available for print within a month of the issue of the recording. And the only piece that never really got published as such was Walter Hartley's marvelous Concerto for 23 Winds. But that was a piece of property nobody felt they could take on. Sorry about that, but all the rest of the pieces were published and available anywhere by anybody. I did not want to record things that nobody could have. So Teresa published on the edition from Italy. And now everybody has Inglesine. Glad to have it. The Golden Ear was a result of a very nice social evening I spent with Charles Brendler, with whom I was very good friends. And this is a march that was Charlie's favorite march, and he never let anybody have it. Until I told him I was looking for a Spanish march to record. Charlie gave me the parts, which I still have. And someday maybe we ought to get an edition out of that. The Valdres March was the result of my first association with the man who got us into the Mercury recording program, the real genius of records, David Hall, who is a Scandinavian buff. His great fascination and interest is the music of Scandinavia. He is himself not Scandinavian, but that's become his great interest. And since he knows all of the music of Scandinavia, I was looking for a Scandinavian march for Hands Across the Sea, and David says, well, there's only one. And I said, what's that? And he says, it's the Valdres March by Hansen. He says, it's the Stars and Stripes Forever of Norway. Well, I mean, with that kind of a build-up, how could I not have Valdres? Well, you know what a great march Valdres turned out to be. It's a symphonic composition as well as a march form very different from all of the rest that I have just now mentioned. And it, again, is a different concept for a different purpose. The Norwegians don't need to go marching over the Belgian border, nor do they need to defend the Belgian border. The march is entirely of a different nature, as is the French from the Italian, from the German, from the British. Coming home, and going forward from the period of Mr. Seuss's first days as a composer and his alliance to the Marine Band, for which he wrote his first great regimental march, Semper Fidelis, we must not forget when we play this march and all of the other regimental marches of Sousa that they were regimental marches designed to be played by the regimental band in conjunction with the field music, which was either fifes and drums, or by that time of Sousa's reign in the Marine Band, bugles and drums. And a separate corps of bugles always played the bugle parts. Now they just leave them out, because they're not solo cornet parts. But everything about these layer cake marches, where one thing comes along and then another layer of trombones is put on top of a layer of trumpets and drums, and then clarinets and flutes and piccolos are put on top of another layer of all of the rest of it. All this regimental layering is because of the presence of field music in the band at that time. Well, of course, when Sousa went on tour, he didn't carry any fifes and drums or any bugles along with him. No fool he couldn't pay for it. And neither can almost everybody else, so they just leave them out. But schools don't need to worry about that. And you usually have lots of drums laying around the place. So any time that you're doing one of these regimental marches, you could very well augment all forces to make them be what they should be. The marches that come to the turn of the century, including Sousa's, and so sad to think that the first five of them that he wrote, including King Cotton, High School Cadets, Deborah Fidelis, he sold to a publisher for $25 outright, for which he had to supply a set of parts for orchestra, a set of parts for band, a reduction for piano, two hands, a reduction for piano, four hands, and for which he made $25. But don't feel sad for Sousa, because he made it up on the next guy. Something like Antonín Dvořák, who, when he was picked out of no place by Brahms, he was playing viola in a cafe. Dvorak was, and Brahms frequented this cafe, by the way. And he was looking through a bunch of scores for a composition contest. You see, even the great Brahms had to do menial things like that. So don't feel so badly about it when you have to do it. And he was piling through score after score after score, finding nothing. And he looked at this score, and he came across two Moravian dances by Antonín Dvořák. And he just leaned back in the chair and he said, "That's it." And he went looking for him, found him in his favorite cafe, playing the viola, took him to his publisher and said, "Here he is. This is the next man." And so Simrock said, "Well, I'd like you to do us some addition of that's a nice little thing you won the prize with. How about a few more dances like that? We'll pay you $300 for a set of eight." So they paid him $300 for the first eight Slavonic dances. Outright. The next set cost them $3,000. As rightly they should have. As far as their value and their joy that they brought to everybody, it should have been $3 million. But Sousa had to scuffle and do other things then. So he started writing different kinds of marches, the money-making kind, real fast, real good. And he took his band to all kinds of expositions, and marches that came in the wake of this, like King Cotton, and the things that he based upon titles from some of his operettas, like El Capitan. This one, of course, only has borrowed the title. But these are different marches. Even El Capitan is so daring as to change the pulse in the middle. So right away, you know, that's not for outdoors. You can just hear some general having a fit while the band is playing. Boy, you can just see the skyrocket going up. So that's a post-regimental march of Sousa's. And it's supposed to be played in a post-regimental manner. You start following Sousa around to expositions, and you find marches named for them. You follow Sousa around, going to parks and bandstands, and you come to this place I was speaking about the other night, Willow Grove, or Manhattan Beach, which was a swinging place on the Long Island Sound. And the march he wrote, called Manhattan Beach, is a swinger. It's not a regimental march. It's not a slow march. It's a swinger. It's a real swinger. And if you play that, sort of dies. It really is a up and up swinger. So is High School Cadets. Although from another period. Moving later on into the development of things with Sousa, he wrote a lot of riding marches. He himself, as I told you the other night, was a devoted rider. You already knew that. I didn't need to tell you that. But he was a devoted rider, and the marches that he wrote for horses were always 6-8 marches. And I'm told that he always had horses' hoofs type things in the background, and so if that's appropriate, I have inserted that in various editions, but only when I felt that was absolutely there, provided by the publisher to begin. All these riding marches are 6-8 marches. Saber and spurs, riders for the flag, black horse troop. And black horse troop, by the way, will be the next march out in the new quarto-sized editions that I'm doing for Fred Fox. You see, Fred lives in Miami, and I happened to discover that he was the last man in when they were looking for money to put together a far-out Broadway show that nobody else would come up with the other $50,000 for, but Fred thought he'd take a chance on it, and he therefore got the film rights and the publication rights, the little show called Man of La Mancha. And I happen to know how much money Fred made on that deal, so I'm having him put out the Sousa marches in the bigger size. I'm a great blackmailer. And these editions of the last 20 marches that Sousa wrote are ones that his father published. He became Sousa's publisher for these last marches. And all I am doing in that edition, and as I said, the next one out will be Black Horse Troop sometime in the fall. All I have done here is to try to clarify things which in the past have not necessarily been particularly clear. And the first thing about the clarity matter is we're not going to forget about this word either. To talk about that, maybe not tonight, but tomorrow. Boy, the time is running out. Wow. Where does it go? The problem with most of the marches, as we said before, has been the postage stamp stock. If that is march size, and this is octavo size, then this is quarto size. And the difference between those three pages is considerable. And I firmly believe that it is this postage stamp size and that unpleasant connotation of trying to turn the damn thing over in a windstorm and marching outside busting up your chop, but when you see one of those things on music stand, everybody rebels somehow. Psychologically, they're turned off as soon as they see it. And it kept a lot of great music buried. When I do these marches, and they're not out in the big editions, by the way, you might be interested in knowing what I do about them. I buy a series of pieces of Manila jute that are about quarto size. And I paste the march up here on top of it. That achieves two things for me. First of all, it can't be filed with the marches. And it can't, therefore, get buried and lost and can't wind up outside or loaned to some marching band somewhere. It gives you room to write pleasant comments down here. Run an arrow up into the second ending and say, C flat, not C natural. Or if you want to change the dynamic at the beginning of the strain or to make clear what the dynamic is, you can run a line up in there, run a little out down here and say what you want. Or you can write something there that somebody can read. That it allows you to get information to the player.
Next after that, and I think as important as anything about it, is this business here. You're playing along, and you want the kids to have the music stand low enough so that they can see you, and then here's the march down at the bottom of the stairs. Cuts off the wind supply, cuts off the visual editor. It's just no good. So this gets the march up at the top of the folder where they both look and see, and it looks like a little different piece of music. It looks like somebody cares about it. For the marches that you are going to use inside that are only available in this edition, and that's a lot of very great ones, I urge you to try doing this. You can mark it in all kinds of ways, do all kinds of things with it. I think it's a great help. I stumbled out of this because I hadn't had a place to put the editing when we were recording. Because, you know, you just can't record them just like they come off the press. You have to make sure that everything is right. And what was one of those things we have to make sure is right? Well, among the first thing we have to make sure is right is this ambivalence in dynamics. The repeated strain, and almost invariably there's a repeated strain, and there are two different dynamics. You can't tell which is piano and which is fortissimo, because they're buried someplace under the crescendo mark in the next strain. Or the accents you can't see, you don't know whether they're above the note or below the note. You don't know whether the double bar here's where the upbeat to the trio is coming into here, and this is what should be piano, because the piano is on this side of the double bar. Now, how many times have you seen that? And if you think everybody's going to automatically correct it, they aren't. And that's what I'm doing with the Susan March. I'm correcting all this sort of thing. Getting rid of the E-flat tenors and the B-flat treble clef baritone parts and the D-flat piccolo and all the rest of the things like that, the C-melody saxophone and a few antiquities like that that are still hanging on. Making sure that the regimental trumpets are folded in to the cornet parts and trumpet parts so that they're not lost. And of course, paramount of interest to me is to clarify the percussion department. In addition to the Susan marches, we face a certain number of great regimental marches in this country, which are made up out of those men who postdated the Civil War. The great men who operated the band business in this country after Gilmore and along with Sousa were men whose names you know by one or two great marches, one of them being David W. Reeves, whose great march, the 2nd Regiment, Connecticut, is also available in the Nothing edition. Please don't buy it. Ask for the original edition or none, please. This is a great, great march, a great march. The national emblem is, of course, for me, high up in the candidate list of the greatest of American marches. I'm opening my concert at Wolf Trap with that one. This is one march, the only march that I know by Bagley, but when I made that statement on a record jacket, somebody from the town of Attleboro, Vermont, promptly sent me another one, which isn't very good, so I'm not going to let anybody see it. The turn of the century time, Reeves, R.B. Hall, the list just goes on and on and on and on of great, great, great marches. The single march by the one-time cornet player at the University of Illinois, Lights Out, marvelous regimental march. That's on the Marching Along album, which I understand has just been re-released. That is one of the best examples of the post-Civil War 6/8 turn of the century march. And in case you're wondering which one that is, that's the one that the students at University of California don't recognize because it's that touchdown song. You know, Dirty Golden Bear. Great march. This leads really to an area that can only be described as the hippodrome.
And the Hippodrome contains some of the great marches that we have. They don't get played.